You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of stealth tanking. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Kristaps 4 on the floor, Zingas, a.k.a. Trey Berculosis, and this is episode 219. On today's show, we're going to explore the possibility that Michael Beasley is Jeff Hornacek's secret tank commander. Yeah, he's not great, but is he way more not great than you even realize? We're going to wash that out of our mouths with a couple of minutes of appreciating the hell out of Kristaps Porzingis. How much of the Knicks missed him? I'm going to contextualize that for you with some numbers. And we're going to close out the show with a couple of stray observations from the loss to the vile, loathsome Indiana Pacers. That game doesn't deserve a blow-by-blow recap. It was disgusting and made me want to vomit. But there were some important observations that I must make. So we're going to do that. One quick update before we start. Wednesday night is my 5-year anniversary with the love of my life, my amazing girlfriend. You can hear my cat outside meowing. He's jealous as hell over the bond that my girlfriend and I share. But we're celebrating on Wednesday night. So Wednesday night, I will not be recording a podcast episode. I will, however, be back on Thursday night. There's going to be a one day break. I think you guys can handle it. All right, let's start the show.
Yes!
Michael Beasley is worse than you think. And I have reason to believe that Jeff Hornacek is deliberately using him in games in which Kristaps Porzingis sits to ensure that the Knicks lose those games and remain in position in the draft lottery. Exhibit A, his defense. How should I put this? He's what we call a drifter. He's a drifter. He drifts. Watch him on defense and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. He doesn't act decisively. He just kind of floats. He's almost mastered it. Like, he'll be kind of floating around there and you'll think to yourself, like, wait, shouldn't he be rotating? There's some action going on. But he floats in the middle of nowhere with such authority, as if there was nothing else he could possibly do but float, that you start to second guess yourself. You're like, well, maybe he's sagging off his man to... And right when you're thinking that, someone else will get beat off the dribble. Let's say Jarrett Jack. And Michael Beasley will be the one closest to the action in order to provide some help defense. And as you're thinking, well, maybe he's sagging off his man too. Jarrett Jack's man just breezed by Michael Beasley. No help defense will have been offered, and Jarrett Jack's man will have scored. And it turns out, no, he didn't know what he was doing. He was just confused, or maybe he didn't care, or maybe his defensive awareness is just naturally very poor, or his conditioning isn't great. There are many things that could be the cause of this, you know, this drifting, this floating. I'm not going to say I know his motives, but the result is that he's not where he's supposed to be, and it looks like he doesn't care. I don't know what's in the guy's heart, but it looks like he doesn't care based on the effort that it seems like he's putting into the play. Even Mike Breen, who is not prone at all in the slightest to like Stephen A. Smith style hysterics, not in the least. Even Mike Breen couldn't help but complain about Beasley's poor body language and the blowout loss to the Pacers on Monday night. He said he looked nonchalant. He said he looked just casual. And I agree with that. It's in a way that seems more or less impossible to attribute to natural athletic ability. Because sometimes people say that, oh, it looks like he's just gliding out there. He's such a natural athlete. But when it's on defense, when there's so little like intensity and he's not getting to the spots and the results aren't there, it's hard. It's almost impossible to attribute that like nonchalance to something positive. And it's much more possible to attribute that nonchalance, that seeming nonchalance, to one of the not-so-positive causes that I mentioned just a minute ago. I think defensive stats are incredibly tricky, but the numbers don't support him here either. Teams score 8.8 more points per 100 possessions with Beasley on the court. When Beasley is on the court, opposing teams score 8.8 more points per 100 possessions than when he's off the court. That's 9th percentile among bigs. I should have said this in the intro, but I feel like I'm coming down with a bad cold also. So if my nose completely stuffs up over the course of this podcast, I apologize in advance. Getting back to Beasley's defense, teams shoot 3.4 percentage points higher when Beasley's on the court. The opposing team, they shoot 3.4 percentage points higher when Beasley is on the court. That's 19th percentile among bigs. Teams turn the ball over at an elite, for them, rate only 10.8% of the time while Beasley is on the court. That's 4.7 percentage points worse than the Knicks. When Beasley is off the court, opposing teams turn it over something like 15% of the time. And that difference is 2nd percentile among bigs. That's very not good. You know, the defense never pesters the opposition when Beasley's on the court. Opposing teams get out in transition 18.6% of the time when Beasley is on the court. The Knicks in general are not good defensively in transition. They give up a lot of transition. But that percentage that I just said, 18.6%, that's 3 percentage points higher than when Beasley is off the court, which puts him in the 7th percentile for bigs. Like I said, defensive stats are notoriously tricky. I don't love them. I think it's really hard to attribute these kind of team stats to one person. But that's a lot of numbers and a lot of different categories that point to him being a very poor defender, in addition to the eye test, which I think most of us would say he fails, right? I think it's generally accepted that Michael Beasley is not great on defense. But what you might not know, ladies and gentlemen, I present to you, and gentlemen, I don't know where that came from, Exhibit B, that Michael Beasley is the stealth tank commander, and that is his offense. All right, stay with me here for a moment. People look at Michael Beasley and they say, well, at least he can score the ball, right? Am I right? Stinks on defense, but he can score the ball, right? But can he? That's my question for you. Can he? Or is he just a high-volume guy with smooth moves who looks better than he is efficient? I know, he looks pretty cool out there. I see it. He's got some nice moves. But is he efficient? Let's take a look at this. He's averaging 8.2 points in 15.2 minutes per game, which translates to 19.5 points per 36. Volume-wise, that's decent. That's a decent stat right there. However, he's averaging only 1.085 points per shot attempt. To put it another way, 108.5 points per 100 Beasley shots. That factors in a couple things. It factors in his pretty bad free throw rate, or percentage, I should say. He's only shooting 62% from the line. And that points per shot attempt, 1.085, is not good for bigs. That's 27th percentile for bigs. So he's sort of kind of putting up points when you look at a per 36, but not in an efficient way. Further on that, his effective field goal percentage is 52.3%. That's 28th percentile for bigs. Reminder, he's coming in for Kristaps Porzingis. So he's got to play one of those, you know. He's playing up in the lineup. He's not playing as a 3. He's playing as a 4 or 5, depending on the lineup. You know, and when you talk about bigs, usually they play so close to the basket that that number, that 52.3% effective field goal percentage, is way higher, usually. He does shoot well at the rim. He's pretty good at the rim. He's a good finisher. But he doesn't get there enough for the position he's playing. Only 46% of his shots come from the rim. At the rim, I should say. Which is 46th percentile in the league for a big, a little bit below average. 44% of his shots come from the mid-range, the dreaded mid-range. That's 78th percentile. But he only hits 38% of his mid-range shots. Not good. That's 42nd percentile. Believe it or not, 9% of his shots come from 3, which is just about average in today's NBA for a big, but he's only hitting 9% of his three-point shots. That's not a mistake. Michael Beasley is hitting 9% of his three-point shots. Despite these, at best, pedestrian numbers, Michael Beasley is using 26.5% of possessions while he's on the court. That's a huge number. That's 93rd percentile among bigs. He's not efficient, and yet he's ending all the Knicks' possessions while he's out there. Part of the problem is that he's hemorrhaging possessions when it comes to turnovers. In just 15 minutes per game, he's averaging 2.1 turnovers. To put it another way, he's turning the ball over on 22.5% of the possessions he finishes. You finish a possession, just a quick reminder, with either a shot, an assist, or a turnover. Those are possessions that you have used. You pass the ball, it leads to a basket, you used it. You take a shot, you use that possession, or you turned it over, you use that possession. And on 22.5% of the possessions he uses, he turns the ball over, which is 9th percentile among bigs. It's an atrocious number. And turnovers, we've talked about this, they're absolute murder. They're murder. And he does this in a variety of ways. He loves horrible passes, but sometimes he'll surprise you. Like Monday night against the Pacers when he got called for a moving screen, which is a nice double whammy of a turnover and a foul. Now, is Michael Beasley the Knicks' biggest problem? Not even close. Not by a long shot. And not in any way scapegoating this guy for the Knicks' overall problems. He plays almost no time at all when Kristaps is healthy. And I feel like an asshole for even recording this vicious hit piece. But when I looked into just how poorly he's played this season, I was really shocked by it, even given that I'm not a fan of his. And I just had to share it with you guys. It really does, I sincerely, this sounds like, you know, a 9/11 truther, but it makes me wonder if Hornacek plays him on purpose to stealthily tank. We've talked about the fine line the Knicks are trying to walk here. This is an idea that's buoyed by some of Kristaps' comments recently about not wanting to rush back from any of his injuries and wanting to wait until he's 100%. That's a sentiment which I'm fine with, by the way, but it's one that suggests there isn't any urgency on his part for this season, perhaps because he realizes a poor record this season may benefit him in the long run. You can never say you're tanking. Evidence is starting to mount that the Knicks are at least trying to hedge their bets, and that when Kristaps is out, they're just like, all right, let's just tank this game. Let's throw it in. In closing, I apologize for being a dick to you, Michael Beasley, but I really do think you may be a producer-style self-sabotage intended to lead to a favorable outcome down the road for the Knicks. Hey, fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? It's true. That's why draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros, and it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded the Draft app. Play in a real live draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes. You're not spending your whole life preparing for this thing. Then get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling every second. So you can join one whenever you want. It's quick, it's easy. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use my promo code, and that's LONIX. That's right, my code, LONIX. Use it. You get some free money to play in a draft when you make a deposit. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're offering Locked On Knicks listeners a money-back guarantee up to $100. You can throw in $100, play around, decide you hate it, you won't because draft's great, and they'll give you your money back, you little crybaby. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play free right now with promo code LONIX. All right, let's wash the taste of Michael Beasley out of our mouths with a little Kristaps Porzingis appreciation. Obviously, he's been sitting the past couple games with an ankle injury and with an illness. I was alerted to an alarming stat the other day by Mike Vorkunov in his excellent piece on Kristaps Porzingis for Vice Sports, and it involved some on-off numbers. I'm going to hit you with it right now. With Kristaps on the court, the Knicks have an efficiency differential of plus 5.7. That's points scored per 100 minus points allowed per 100. When Kristaps is on the court, their efficiency differential is plus 5.7. That's the efficiency differential of a 55-win team. It's also 15.7 percentage points higher than when he's off the court. 15.7! When Kristaps doesn't play, the Knicks are minus 10, which is the efficiency differential of a 38-win team. That's enormous. That's an enormous difference. That's 93rd percentile for bigs in terms of the difference he has on their team's efficiency differential. I repeat, when Kristaps is on the court, the Knicks play like a 55-win team. When he's off it, they play like a 38-win team. It's remarkable. It made me want to look at some more on-off stats to see how much the Knicks miss Kristaps when he doesn't play. The Knicks score 9.8 points more per 100 possessions with Kristaps on the court than off. That difference is 89th percentile among bigs, near the top of the league. They allow 6 fewer points with him on the court per 100 possessions than with him off. A very high number. That's 80th percentile for bigs. They turn the ball over only 14.4% of the time with him on the court, which would be good for 73rd percentile in the league. Like, pretty good. Not like elite, but pretty good. However, that's 5 percentage points lower than it would be without him, with him off the court. And that's the best mark in the league for bigs. When Kristaps is on the court, he uses possessions efficiently. The offense hums. The other players play well with him. The Knicks get out in transition where they get easy buckets. Kristaps Porzingis helps the Knicks turn on the ball because they play better together as a team. Something else that was interesting, the Knicks make 5.4 more free throws per 100 possessions with him on the court than off. He's been doing a great job of getting to the line. Another efficient use of possessions. That difference in free throws per 100 is 88th percent. Excuse me. It's 88th percentile among bigs. And he's doing all this while using an astronomical 30.9% of possessions. That's 96th percentile for bigs. He's using so many possessions, and he's using them so well to such good effect. Kristaps Porzingis is a superstar. He's amazing, and I love him. And I can't wait to welcome him back on Wednesday night at home against the Memphis Grizzlies. Let's see if he can jump right back into that form. It appeared as if he'd recovered in those first 3 minutes or so against the Heat before Justice Winslow sprained the shit out of his ankle and put himself atop the enemy's list, at least for a brief moment in time. You guys are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Every 5-star rating is a big help to us. Thank you very much. Locked On Knicks. I'd like to close with some stray observations from the Knicks' loss to the Pacers on Monday night. I don't want to go into detail, blow by blow, about everything that happened. This was a vomitorium of a game. But there were some observations I'd like to make for y'all. All right? I want to talk about a frustrating lack of defensive savvy. There's bad defense because you stink and you're slow. You know? You're just not an athlete. You can't keep up. And that's totally forgivable in my book. You can't help that you're slow. Presumably, if you're in the NBA, you know, it's not because you're fat and out of shape, but because you lack speed due to the vagaries of chance, if you're slow. If you just can't keep up, right? You don't have the movement for it. But then there's bad defense because you have your head all the way up your ass. And we saw this in the first quarter. This drove me nuts. Jarrett Jack and Enes Kanter had to switch each other's men. They pretty much did. They had to switch. But then they had so much time to switch back because the play went away from them. But they had their heads all the way up their asses, and they were happy to stay in that horrible switch. Again, Enes was on the point guard, whoever it was at the time, and Jarrett Jack was on their big, the guy who was guarding Enes. So, like, the worst switch you could possibly have, and they had forever to switch back, and they were just kind of like, derp-de-derp. So that kind of thing drives me nuts. Another observation. Damian Dotson got some burn. He looked solid on D. He did. He looked very good. He fought over screens. He kept his feet moving. He kept his hands active to deny passing lanes. He didn't give the Knicks much on offense, but I thought he had a very nice defensive effort. to talk about Courtney Lee, who's having a fantastic season. He just looked super out of it, which was par for the course. Everyone on the Knicks looked terrible on Monday. This was exemplified by him committing three straight sloppy-ass turnovers in the second quarter, at which point we learned from the announcing crew of Breen and Clyde that he's been battling a respiratory infection. So I feel you, Courtney. Getting sick will not only make you sluggish, but will seriously mess with your decision-making abilities. No one can deny this. Another stray observation. Nick Collison of the Indiana Pacers looks exactly like the lead actor in Get Out. All right, let's talk about Sunnings given and Sunnings received. There were three, by my count. Enes Kanter got sunned twice early from close range on snuffed-out layup attempts. I like that he goes up strong, and usually he's excellent at finishing, but there was just bad timing on a couple of those bunnies. Maybe he could have used a pump fake. However you want to slice it, Enes Kanter got sunned twice early, and he got sunned hard. Dotson, we talked about his defense before, he double-sunned Sabonis by blocking him while Sabonis offensively fouled him. If you're going to pick up an offensive foul, you can't get your shit sent back at you. That's just embarrassing. Sabonis got double-sunned by Dotson. Doug McDermott dribbled it off his own foot in the second quarter and then fell over, presumably trying to draw a foul. It didn't work. It looked terrible. It was a verified self-sun, if I've ever seen one, and I've seen quite a few. I would just like to say that Lance Stephenson is a clown. There was one possession, he danced around for almost all of the 24-second shot clock, finally got by Frank at the last second, scored on a scoop layup, then danced up the court like not only like he had never been there before, you know how they say that, act like you've been there before, but it was like he had no idea there even existed until 5 seconds before he scored that basket. Meanwhile, if he tried to pull that shit every time down, that would be horrible basketball. Like, I know you like think you kind of sunned him, but it was a bad play. You got lucky that your clown town show worked out. Keep dancing, clown. Keep dancing. You score 8 points a night in 21 minutes. It's awful. You stink. Clyde made his second fallback baby reference in two games. That's a reference to Knicks legend Dick Barnett, if you're a youngster and don't know that. I'm getting a little bit worried about him. He played during the late 60s, early 70s, Dick Barnett, for the Knicks. I hope Clyde doesn't think he's like actually in the 1970s. More on that in a bit. He's starting to get a little, I don't know. I feel like he's a little out of it lately. We saw what I believe was the Knicks' first full five substitution of the season, where the coach yanks out all five guys at once and puts in a whole new five guys. Sometimes they call it a hockey substitution. And that's the coach's way of saying, you guys suck, and I hate you, and I want you out of here. I'm going to show everyone what a bunch of clowns you are. I would love, this is a call I'm placing to the basketball community, to please keep track of full five substitutions. Come on, Basketball Reference, you can do this. I know you can. I want to know who leads the league in these by the end of the year, per 36, all that good stuff. The phrase, Thad Young continues his dominance, was uttered at one point during this game. I think that's all you really need to know. Barf, Vomitorian. Continuing the I'm worried about Clyde theme, Walt Clyde Frazier said, Baker scores his first points of the year when Baker hit a three in the third quarter. And Breen, very awkwardly, was like, no, he's scored some points already. Somebody please check on Clyde and tell me he's okay. I want to make sure his memory's all right. Frank drove to the hoop aggressively on a number of possessions, even getting an and one, a pretty and one on one of them. That's a good thing. Glad to see that. Of note, we saw Joakim Noah again. He looked gassed as hell after about 2 minutes. To be, expected. But he was like literally like huffing and puffing, hands on knees. Felt kind of bad for him. I hope you gain your fitness back soon, Joakim. In the final bit of I'm Worried About Clyde news, in the fourth quarter he asked, what state has more renowned colleges than Indiana? Then he listed Notre Dame, Purdue. Huge pause. Indiana. Huge pause. Ball State. And, you know, in the moment, anyone can forget anything. But the answer to your question, Clyde, is not Indiana. It's Massachusetts. Come on, Clyde. The answer is Massachusetts. We got Harvard, MIT, BU, Tufts, Brandeis, Williams, Smith, Berklee College of Music, Wellesley, Amherst. The list goes on and on. It makes me feel a little bit better about this next observation. Clyde hit Billy Hernangómez with a he giveth and he taketh away late in the fourth. That's a phrase he usually reserves for Beasley. And that's because Billy's offense looked a lot better in this game. He finally started to get going a little bit in that regard. But his defense was still not good, to put it mildly. To end the game, Doug McDermott, who self-sunned himself earlier, passed up a wide-open three, kind of pump-faked, and then drove the lane for a vicious slam against no one, basically, which angered the fans a little bit. But, you know, he needed to make up for that self-sun, and also, fuck you. The Knicks were down by 1,000 points at that point. If you're down by 1,000 points, you can make a gratuitous slam. You know, you're allowed to do that. You're not driving the score up, driving the score down. That's all right. All right, that's it for this game. Let's bury that wet fart of a game. Never talking about it again. That's it for this episode. Hopefully it wasn't a wet fart of an episode. If you wouldn't mind, please rate us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter, and be chill to each other, all right? Is that too much to ask? And remember, there will be no show recorded Wednesday night. It's my 5-year anniversary. Love you, boo. But I'll be back Thursday night with another episode of Locked On Knicks. Peace!